Good morning. I was struck watching that video that whoever designed, interior designed inside of that church also was designing our home where it's we're renovating, and it looks very familiar. Okay. Anyway, welcome. Man, I have this relationship, it's like this love-hate relationship when like I'm not up here. Like I so appreciate that Kelly and John did a good job the last couple weeks. I get a little anxious, a little stir crazy. I got to be up here. I have energy for it. I'm ready to roll, and that's where we're at today. So we're in the fourth week of six on the life of David, this guy who was a king and a prophet, a son and a father. He was a man after God's own heart, and he was a violent man. He was a man whose actions and that statement, man after God's own heart, it seemed to be in paradox, seemed to be in conflict. This is who David was. David was multitudes wrapped into one. So we're in the fourth week of six on the life of David. But a couple years ago, I was playing frisbee golf with my son and my son's best friend and my son's best friend's father. The four of us were playing frisbee golf in Nashua. And if you know anything about it, it's as nerdy as it sounds. But basically, it's like golf, only nerdier. And you throw a disc into its a goal. Like it just plays exactly like golf plays. But oftentimes, you play frisbee golf in the forest. And so we're playing frisbee golf. And you throw the frisbee, and you walk over to it, and you throw it again, and you count your throws. And so we threw the frisbee, and you walked over to it. As we like turned the corner, it's like this opening in the frisbee golf course, we saw a sight that was a sight to behold. It was people who were dressed up like medieval times, but like they made it themselves. It was like Game of Thrones meet Hobby Lobby sort of thing. And they were like acting out some sort of medieval situation. Like they would sword fight, and when someone would end the sort of thing, the battle, fall, they would quite literally fall and writhe in pain, even though they had like pool noodles with PVC pipe in the middle they were whacking each other with. And so we're like, you know, I'm not saying frisbee golfers are like high on the hierarchy of cool, but they're way higher than that, right? And so we're like, what? And this is like 5-6 years ago. So this is like LARPing, which is what this is, wasn't as prevalent as mainstream as it is now, right? And so we're just like, what is happening right now? Hey guys, what you doing, right? It's like, and it's this funny thing where they would like come and they would sword fight each other and in their little homemade medieval costumes and like, oh, it's Halloween, but it's July, funny. And you're like, man, like, what is up with that? It's so funny. And really, I think it's like some sort of fascination, like deep in your soul, deep in the heart. Like there's, like, it's of an era gone by or of a way of dealing with things. I mean, it would be great, right? If you know, Joan from The Office told you put your TPC report in the wrong file again. And you're like, oh, really, Joan? Let me just have a conversation about that file. You know, or like, you know, you're at, You order your bagel with plain cream cheese, and they put veggie cream cheese on. You're like, oh, veggie cream cheese. Is that how this is rolling, right? You know, it'd be great if we could handle our problems that way. And maybe that's why we're fascinated with it. But, you know, Game of Thrones or The Lord of the Rings or there's the TV shows and the movies go on and on, this sort of like sword fighting and kings and queens and knights and horseback riding. There's something deeply connective about the human spirit of these things. That's what you have in this story of David. At some point, he's running from a king. At other times, he is a king. You know, he has queens. He's going into battles with a sword in his hand. He's standing up against the giant Goliath. Like this, there's things, it almost feels like one of these stories at times, and at other times, it feels like our Tuesdays, because it's real people with real struggles, with real flaws, with really broken people, which is why we call the series A Broken Hallelujah, because David was a passionate worshiper, but he was a broken man. And now what you have over the first period of David's life, as David comes onto the scene, and God gives him something, and then God removes that something. God blesses him with something, and he removes that blessing from him. And you see it over and over and over again. This is kind of like what shapes the first part of David's life. I mean, don't take my word for it. Look what happens. So when a couple weeks ago when I was speaking, I talked about how David's family was going to be, someone in his family going to be anointed as the next king. And so the prophet comes to his home, and he and his dad doesn't even invite him to this party, which would probably said everything to David about the way his father viewed him that he ever possibly could have said. And then after this, you don't really hear from or see David's family again. And so David had a family, and then he kind of walks away from his family. He doesn't rely on his family anymore. You don't see David and his family interacting much anymore. And what happens then is David kind of then errs on the side of leaning into the guy who was king at this time. David goes on and he fights the giant Goliath, and then he falls into favor with the current king, this king named Saul. And Saul sees something in David that his own father didn't see. And so Saul kind of becomes this surrogate father for David. But David begins to move up through the ranks, and he becomes this famous individual. And so Saul becomes jealous of David. And so at one point, when Saul is jealous of David and trying to kill him, and there's David and Saul are speaking from across the ravine, David refers to Saul as my father, and Saul refers to David as my son. And at the same time, Saul is trying to kill David. So he's given this blessing, and this thing that he relied on was taken from him. You know, his position in the court, in the army. You know, along that way, he was brought into the king's court. He was the commander of the king's army. And then when the king became jealous of him, that position was taken from David. You keep going. You have at one point, David's best friend was that king Saul's son, Jonathan. And so he has this deep relationship. The Bible says their souls were knit together. And when David had to run from Saul, he had to run from his best friend, Saul's son, Jonathan, as well. As David's running from the king, he does things, he makes choices. He gives up his integrity, he gives up his dignity, he lies, he cheats, he deceives. He's violent, he doesn't have to be at times, that he's running from the king. This thing, he's this bastion of undefiled integrity, and at times that begins to erode. At one point, he acts crazy so that people don't think he's a threat. He throws himself on the ground, and the Bible says that the drool is dripping from his beard. He gives up his integrity and his dignity along the way. And then in chapter 23, a mentor and friend, the prophet Samuel, passes away. And what you have is you have this man who has God's blessing on his life. He is anointed but not yet appointed as king. And then he has things that he relies on, and then those things are taken from him. And I believe that this is not just descriptive, how it operated and worked for David. I think this is prescriptive. I think this is how God still operates today. I think there'll be times in our life when we rely on things other than God, and God will allow that thing to be taken from us. Because God loves us too much to allow us to rely on anything but him. This is what happens in David's life. David relies on something else, and God says, no, I love you too much to allow you to rely on something other than me. And he would take it from him, and he would take it from him, and he would take it from him. And in these moments, you might feel hurt or wounded or in mourning over what was taken from you, but this is God loving you, because when you rely on anything but God, eventually that thing will fail you. And so what you have now in the point in the story is David, and he's running from the king. The king is trying to kill him. David has 600 soldiers, and the king has an entire army, the nation's entire army, and he is running from him. And everything he has relied on up to this point has been, he receives it, he relies on it, it's been taken. He receives it, he relies on it, it's been taken. He receives it, he relies on it, and it's been taken. And it's only him, and it's God, and the chips are down, and there's nothing left. It's only him and God, and he's on the run. And so instead of like going sort of like micro into an individual story, what we're going to do is we're going to pull back from a story and look at the macro. Look at the sort of like the themes and the big picture of David. Not a tree, but the forest. A theme of what's going on in David's life. Are there moments when David makes good choices and what's present there? Are there moments when David makes poor choices and what's present there? When the chips are down, when he has nothing else to rely on, when it's him and God, when does he make good choices and when does he make poor choices? We're going to be momentarily in 1 Samuel 21. If you have a Bible, you can turn there. We're going to look at two verses. So, we're not going to be there super long. But it's going to, set the tone for the rest of our day. In 1 Samuel 21, verse 8 and 9. By the way, if you don't own a Bible, we have some on the shelf back there. We want you to take that. It's not something that, take a Bible. If you don't own a Bible, do not leave today without taking one. We want you to have it. We have to order cases of Bibles all the time now, which I'm super happy about. Right? You have to have a case and it'll serve us for 2 years. No. They're gone all the time. It's great. It's awesome. You guys really take up. But if you take it and then take another one the next week, another one next week, we're not asking for that. So anyway, we'll move on. You have like a stack of Bibles. There's 72 Bibles from church. And 92 pins. I see you all. Anyway, open a glove compartment in your car, 17 pins fall out. All right. All right, so in 1 Samuel 21, 8 and 9, it says this. David's on the run from the king. He goes into a town called Nob, and as he enters into Nob, he's like literally running from the king. And so he goes into this town Nob, and he goes into the temple, and he's like, because he's running from the king, and the king is chasing him. And in the temple, he says, "David, ask Ahimelech, do you have a spear or a sword? Do you have a spear or a sword or anything I could use to defend myself?" The king's business was so urgent that he didn't have time to grab a weapon. By the way, that's a lie. He's not doing business for the king. He's running from the king. He lies to this priest. This lets you know that already he's kind of in a bad frame of mind. When you feel like you have to deceive and lie to get by, you're already usually in a bad place. Verse 9, this is Ahimelech, the high priest, responding to David. "I only have the sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah," the priest replied. "It is wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. Take that if you want it, for there is nothing else here." "There is nothing like it," David replied. "Give it to me." So you probably don't know what an ephod is. It's a term we use every day. An ephod is what the priest would have worn when he's doing priestly duties. You'll see a picture of it here. This is an ephod. And a couple details about it. There's some gold involved. There's what looks like the robot from Star Wars. You got the little buttons right here. Those aren't actually buttons. Was that R2-D2 or C-3PO? R2-D2, yeah. Those aren't R2-D2 buttons right there. Those are stones that represent the 12 tribes of Israel. And this was called an ephod. And the ephod represents God's presence, God moving, God's guidance, God's alignment. You know, you aligning with God. And this is the ephod. This is what this is called. This is the priest. When the priest would do official things, he'd be wearing the ephod. And oftentimes what would happen is the priest would come and he would speak on behalf of God to the king or the leaders, and he would give God's guidance. That someone could come to the priest, and if they were wearing, they would wear the ephod, and they would ask God, "God, what should my leaders do? What should these people do?" And then then God would answer, and then the priest would respond to the king, and he would give him guidance. And the ephod represents God's guidance. And so what happens is David is running from the king, and he says, "Do you have a weapon? Do you have a spear? Do you have a sword? Something." And the thing is, I just told you that David has 600 men, and he's going up against the thousands of soldiers in the king's army. Like, what is one more weapon going to do for David? It's not going to really do or accomplish anything. But the priest says, I have a sword. It's the sword of Goliath. It's behind the ephod. And so what David had to do is he had to either move the ephod, he had to move this thing that represents God's guidance and presence. And it represented God's best will for your and my and David's life. He took this thing and he moved it out of the way so that he could grab the sword of Goliath. So this moment when David, the chips were down, everything had been taken from him, he had nothing to rely on, he had a moment, he had a choice. He could either choose the ephod or he could choose a sword. And the ephod represents God's presence, God's guidance, God's wisdom, our alignment with him in our life, who God is and who he made us to be. And so what David did is he grabbed the ephod and he moved that out of the way and he grabbed Goliath's sword. What's funny about Goliath's sword is Goliath was a giant, and so Goliath's sword would have been a sword made for a giant. And David, with all confidence, said, "Oh, that sword? Yeah, I know that sword. I can use that sword." What's fascinating is that it gives you a hint into who David was now. David wasn't the shepherd boy anymore. David was a man who was confident he could wield the sword of a giant, right? But he Goliath wasn't just any man. He was a sociopath. He was violent. He was vindictive. He was disruptive. He was dangerous. And there was this moment in David's life when he could either choose the ephod, God's guidance, or he could choose the sword. And there were several moments in David's life when he could either choose the ephod or he could choose the sword. And really what the sword represents is the sword represents taking things into your own hands. Maybe things that have worked okay for you in the past, but not the ephod, not pursuing what God has for you. The sword represents, all right, like the chips are down, everything's been taken, the things I would rely on that I can't rely on right now, what am I going to do? How am I going to respond? Oh, I'm going to take things into my own hand. That's what I'm going to do. And several times in David's life, he reaches for the sword instead of the ephod. And it represents this, sort of this violence, this absence of pursuing God. Now, there were times when God led him into battle. And there are lots of times that David responded out of sort of instinct, impulse, reaction, knee-jerk reaction. You know, a couple examples. You know, the first one happens in 1 Samuel 25, 12 through 13. This is an example where someone insults David. That's all that happens. Someone insults David. They throw an insult. They lob an insult over at David. And this is what happens. So David's young men returned and told him what Nabal had said. And David says, "Get your swords," was David's reply, as he strapped on his own. So this guy, Nabal, insulted David. And so David's like, "Oh, you're going to insult me? Oh, okay. Well, let's go." This is not how we handle conflict, right? This is not how we operate. I mean, you can keep going. You can keep moving. Other examples, you know, in 1 Samuel 27:1, Saul's pursuing David, but David kept thinking to himself, "Someday Saul is going to get me." Boy, this feels so much like our Tuesdays, doesn't it? Like when something's happening, when the chips are down, when the things that you've relied on in the past aren't working for you, when your life is frustrating, life is hard, what do? We keep thinking to ourselves, right? Like we get in our own head, we get in our own feelings. You feel some kind of way about what's happening. David kept thinking to himself, "Oh man, eventually Saul's going to get me. Eventually it's not going to work out for me. Eventually God's going to allow Saul to get me. How could God allow Saul to do these things and say these things about me? Life isn't fair." Oh, David kept thinking to himself. When David thinks to himself, and when David gets into that cycle of thinking to himself, you know what he does? He reaches for the sword. But there are other times in David's life. He doesn't reach for the sword. He reaches for the ephod. He reaches for God's guidance. He reaches for God's wisdom. He reaches for God's presence. But before we get there, what's your sword? When things don't go well for you, when things are frustrating, when Joan from the office tells you the TPC report is in the wrong file again, what is your sword? I mean, it's probably not a literal sword. Like for David, his sword was a sword, right? And you're not like, "Oh, Joan, is that so? Well then, let's duel in the back parking lot." But what is your sword? What do you sort of relationally turn to when the chips are down? Are you a screamer? Right? Are you like, "How could you? I mean, are you a, you hurt me, so I'm going to hurt you in response. I'm going to scream at you. I'm going to belittle you." What is your sword? For many of us, we turn to anger, but anger is like this umbrella. It's not like what we're actually feeling. Like sometimes we'll say we're angry when we're feeling rejected. Sometimes we'll say we're angry when we're feeling overlooked. Sometimes we'll say we're angry and we're feeling confused. We're out of control. Like we're not enough. Like we're insignificant or insufficient. And all of these sort of more nuanced feelings bubble to the surface as this umbrella of anger. And when it's anger, it's probably more nuanced under the surface. Like, what is it? What is your response? What is your sword? Are you a screamer? Or are you a lack of communication? Are you a withholder? Are you like, "Nope, I'm not going to speak to you. I'm not going to talk to you. I'm not going to look at you." Sometimes people's swords aren't even like what they do in the moment. Sometimes it's they, "Oh, you're going to say that to me? You're going to do that to me? Awesome. I've got this notebook where I tally everything you do to me in detail, and I keep tallies. And you're not going to know it, but in 6 weeks, you're going to not open the door for me, and I'm going to whip out my book and unleash upon you the 72 things you've done to me over the last 6 months in detail. And because you don't tally, you'll have nothing to say in response." that notebook in your mind, not actually a notebook, unless you're really sick. I don't know, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. That notebook in your mind, the tally of the wrongs, that is your sword. And it's not that it's less of a sword. It's like a sneakier sword. For some people, their sword is manipulation. I'm going to manipulate you. I'm going to manipulate things to get my way. When the chips are down, when I can't rely on anything, when it's just me and God, I'm going to manipulate. What is your sword? For David, it was a literal sword. But we don't have literal swords like that anymore. But there are other moments when David reached for the ephod, when David, instead of reaching for the sword, he reached for God's guidance and his presence in his life. Actually, there are nine times, nine examples in David's life when it says that David asked the Lord something. Usually something very, very specific. David, sometimes it says David called for the ephod and asked the Lord. It's fascinating. Nine times in David's life, he either calls for the ephod or asks the Lord something. I'm going to go through them really briefly. In 1 Samuel 23:1-2, it says this. One day, news came that the Philistines were at Keilah, stealing grain from the threshing floor. Next, David asked the Lord, should I go and attack them? Yes, go and save Keilah. The Lord told him. It's just one time David says, it says David asked the Lord. 1 Samuel 23:4 says it this way. It says, so David asked the Lord again, and again the Lord replied, go down to Keilah, for I will help you conquer the Philistines. Later on in the same chapter, verse 9, it says this, but David learned of Saul's plan and told Abiathar the priest to bring the ephod, and he asked the Lord what he should do. Keep going. And again, David asked, will the leaders of Keilah betray me and my men to Saul? And the Lord replied, yes, they will betray you. We keep going. In 1 Samuel 36:6-8, it says this, but David found strength in the Lord his God. When the chips are down, when you have nothing to rely on, when it's just you and God, there's always a moment, there's always a beat, there's always a pause. There's that moment when you could scream at someone, if your sword is screaming at someone, there's that moment when but to scream, you have to breathe first, right? It's like, so there's always at least a moment, a beat, a pause before the sword. And in that moment, in this situation, David found strength in the Lord his God. Then he, David, said to Abiathar the priest, bring me the ephod. So Abiathar brought it. Next slide. Then David asked the Lord, should I chase after this band of raiders? Will I catch them? And the Lord told him, yes, go after them. Notice as we're going through these things, how David is asking God very, very specific things. He says, God, should I do this? Should I talk to this person? Should I go this way? Should I cross over there? Should I? Sometimes I feel like when we pursue God, when we ask God things, we're like, God, what's the meaning of life? And God's like, he like points at his Bible. He's like, yeah, go read that. But it's like, God, should I do this? Should I accept this job? Should I do this with this person? Should I have this relationship? Should I go in this direction? Those are answers that God can respond. He can respond to. And we're going to keep reading. 2 Samuel 2:1 says this. After this, David asked the Lord, should I move back to one of the towns of Judah? Yes, the Lord replied. Then David asked, which town should I go to? We're going to keep reading. In 2 Samuel 5:19, it says this. So David asked the Lord, should I go out to fight the Philistines? Will you hand them over to me? The Lord replied to David, yes, go ahead. And again, we're going to keep going. In 2 Samuel 21:1, it says this. There was a famine during David's reign that lasted for 3 years. So David asked the Lord about it. And the Lord said, the famine has come because Saul and his family are guilty of murdering the Gibeonites. And this is a passage, and over and over and over in David's life, there are moments when David grabs for the sword. When David thinks to himself, when he gets in his own head, his own feeling, he relies on himself. I mean, honestly, the sword at other times has worked well for him. There are moments in his life when David has grabbed the sword because God ordained him to, and that worked out well for him. But there are other times when God grabbed the sword and God didn't call him to it. And time again, that doesn't go well for him. There are times in David's life when David, in that moment, in that pause, in that breath, he doesn't reach for the sword, but he reaches for the ephod. He reaches for God's presence. He asks God. He leans into God. He leans away from the sword and into God. And in those moments, it always, 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 always goes well for him. It's not always the easiest path. It's not always the straightest path. It's not always the path that looks, you know, rosy and smooth and there's birds chirping on it, but it's always the best path. Sometimes God calls us to the hard path, the hard right path. So there's this conflict. There's this sort of like duality in David's life, where there are moments when he reaches for the sword, and there are moments he reaches for the ephod. And when he reaches for the sword before he reaches for the ephod, it always goes poorly for him. And when he reaches for the ephod, it always goes well. And what you'd see that happens in David's life, when he reaches for the ephod, three things happen every single time. And if you do these three things in your life, if you live with these three things in the forefront of your mind, this is you reaching for the ephod. This is you putting down your sword and you reaching for the ephod. This is you putting down your knee-jerk reaction, the things you rely on, you relying on yourself, the things that have worked for you in the past, even though they've been destructive. If you do these things, you'll align your life with who God is and who he made you to be. It'll cause you to put down the sword when God doesn't want you to have it in your hand. David did these three things. David paused. Every single time he's running towards someone or from someone, there's some conflict happening, there's some emergency happening, and instead of just charging ahead, like when David reaches for the sword, it's always like, charge ahead. But when David stops, he pauses. He takes a breath. He takes a beat. It might be the breath before the scream, but there's always a moment. David pauses. David asks. David asks these very sort of like specific things. He asks, what's fabulous, what's beautiful, is that at no point does the Bible stop and say, by the way, God is listening. In the story of David, it never says, David and God had a particular relationship. David and God, God listened to David more than he listens to you. It just assumed that God is listening, that he's around, that he's active, that he's involved, and that if you rely on him, he will respond. If you lean into him, he will lean back into you. It doesn't have to say these things, because it's assumed. It's just true that when David asked, God responded. So David paused. David asked. And then David obeyed. That when God called him to something, when God said, David, I want you to go here, go there, don't do this, do this, rely on this person, go this way, save these people, battle these people. Then when David grabbed the sword, it was within God's guidance and it went well for David. So just like David, who paused, who asked, and who obeyed, this is my challenge for you this week, to pause, to ask, and to obey. I don't know what your sword is. Right, I don't know what your sword is. Like, I don't know when the chips are down, when you're frustrated, when you're tired, when you're angry, like what the sword is that you grab, but I know that you have something. And I know that if you've walked with God for any amount of time, there have been moments when you grabbed the sword, and there are moments when you've grabbed the ephod. And if you think back at those examples, these times in your life, you can probably see how things went well for you or bad with you because you grabbed the sword or you grabbed the ephod. I've got a friend here. Her name is Sharon, and she's right there. Hi, Sharon. And Sharon, my wife and I moved to this area. We didn't have children back then, so I had less eye wrinkles. And it was 10 years ago, but I looked 20 years younger now. And I'm not joking. Anyway, and so 10 years ago, I moved to the area to be a youth pastor at Grace Community. And Sharon was the executive director at Grace. And at that time, Sharon had been doing ministry for longer than I had been alive. And so I took it upon myself to show her how ministry should be done. And when we would butt heads, I would time and time again grab for the sword. And my sword was willing to say anything, willing to do anything. Really, it comes down to, like, honestly, it came down to, with us, it came down to me not getting my way. Oh, I can't have my way? Awesome. Well, you better grab your sword, Sharon, right? And it was you know, disrespectful words, attacking words, just sort of like, ugh. You're not going to tell me? Oh, you're going to tell me no? Oh, you can tell me no. Awesome. Well, you can take that no and on guard, right? Like, this is the nature of it. And honestly, it wasn't even about Sharon. You know, I had worked at previous churches and had sort of like difficult interactions with leaders. And so, you know, we're not going to take it. You know, the man, like I was going to fight against the man. And the man was a woman this time. So. And so there was like this conflict and this turmoil. And the thing is, like, when you grab your sword, you grab your sword to wound the person across from you, but you never only grab them. You don't only wound them, because you wound yourself in the process. You can't wound someone else without wounding yourself. And so time and time again, I would grab my sword with Sharon, and I would try to wound her, and I would, and I'd wound myself in the journey. And then she moved on to other things, and to her credit, you know, a couple years later, you know, we had both, you know, been, you know, at the time apart, and she's like, hey, you know, I just wanted to, we grabbed coffee, and we sort of reconciled. And then you push the fast forward button about 4 years or so, and it came up that I was going to be interviewing here. And Sharon was on staff here. And Sharon and I at that point were good. We had reconciled. But, you know, we hadn't worked together in a long time. Last time we worked together, there was lots of sword grabbing. So, I sat down with Sharon in the interview process. And I was like, Sharon, I'm interviewing, as you know. And I'm not going to come unless I have your blessing. You have the veto power over this. You can say no, and I'm not going to come. You know, I feel like it's something that God is doing. But if there's not peace, if there's not unity in this, then it's not what he's doing. And to her credit, she said, yes, come. I think it'll be great. And Sharon and I are friends now. Right? We're friends now, right, Sharon? I don't know if you saw her, but she was like this. She was like. No. It's because there are moments when you grab the sword and to wound others, but you wound yourself. And there are moments when you grab for the ephod, you grab for God's guidance, his best for you, his wisdom in situations. And relationally, personally, in your soul, it just goes better for you. So this week, what's your sword? And instead of grabbing your sword, pause, ask, and obey. Let's pray. God, I thank you for these stories of people like David who are so flawed, who have moments when they think to themselves, there's moments when they reach for their sword in destructive ways, there are moments when they hurt others and hurt themselves in the process, because that's so us. Like, it wouldn't be helpful, God, if the people in these stories, they were perfect little angels and cherubs and they never did the wrong thing, because we couldn't find ourselves in those stories. I'm so grateful for stories like David's. Stories where the characters are flawed, where they reach for their sword. And in his case, it was a literal sword, but in ours, it's not. Hopefully. God, and because that's us. And there are moments, God, when David, instead of reaching for a sword, relied on you. And that's also us. There are moments, and it kind of went back and forth. There's not really a rhyme or reason in David's life. Sometimes he'd grab the sword, and sometimes he'd grab for the ephod, and you couldn't really guess ahead of time. And that also sounds like us. Because we can find ourselves in these stories because these people are flawed. So God, I want to thank you for that. That your book, your Bible is filled with people who are just like us. We can find ourselves in them. And God, I don't know what everyone in here's sword is. You know, it's probably different. There's as many different natures to our swords as there are people in the room. So I can't say that it's one thing or the other. We all have our sword that we grab for whether it's worry or fear or anger or sadness or withholding or manipulation or whatever. Like, it's all the same thing. We do it and it wounds others and it wounds us too. It causes conflict and grief and destruction in our soul and the souls of others. And what happens is we grab our sword and someone grabs theirs and we wound them and ourselves and then they wound us and themselves. And so we can either grab our sword or we can grab for the ephod. We can grab for your presence. We can lean into you. And by that, it's pausing. It's asking and it's obeying. God, I'm going to ask something very specific from you this week. If us here in this Harbor family, if we take these steps this week, can you be a level of present in our life more so than normal so that we can experience you, so that we can find you faithful in this way? God, I believe that if we pause and we ask and we obey, that you will answer and you will bless. And so, God, I ask you, I think that you answer and you bless, and sometimes we don't even notice it, we just move along. So not only do I ask you to answer and to bless, I ask you to point out to us, like tap us on the shoulder, excuse me, I answered and I blessed and you didn't notice. So God, I ask you to be present in our lives when we pause and we ask and obey, for you to answer and for you to bless, and for you to show us how you've been active in our lives. Just show up. You're always faithful, but remind us of your faithfulness this week. So obvious, we couldn't possibly miss it. God, give us the wisdom and the strength. Give us the moment of clarity and that moment of pause to reach for your presence, your best, instead of our sword. We love you and we thank you. In your name, amen.